Session number 7390, Reel 1.
Grey, Reel 1. How did you come to be in East Africa, Colonel Grey?
Well, I was selected by the War Office because I'd had experience of Mule Pack Wireless in India, and that is obviously what they wanted.
Which units had you been in India?
With the signals all the time, 2nd Indian Div signals, which was at Quetta.
And can you tell me a little bit about your process of selection for East Africa?
No, I was just told that I was to report to War Office, and I went down from Northern Ireland. I went down to London, and then was sent out to His Majesty's Government Communications Centre at Wadden Hall, and became part of the Foreign Office, where I was then told that a mission was going to be formed and to go out to Ethiopia to start a revolt.
Did they tell you why a revolt was necessary?
Well, the Italians had captured it in 1935, and I presume the British wanted them out of Ethiopia because they were a thorn in the side of all the troops in Africa. Rommel's army and the Kenyan army and Sudan Defence Force.
Did the force that you were going to join have any particular name?
Yes, we were given the title of Mission 101.
And did they tell you precisely what your own role was going to be?
Apart from the fact that I was going to be in charge of the signals, that was all I was told. And as I say, I went down to His Majesty's Government Communications Centre, and there we started getting the 6 PAC wireless stations made up. Suitcase wirelesses, which were rather new in those days. But they had to be all Mule PAC. And it took us about 3 months before we got those ready at Wadden.
Were you impressed by the efficiency of the equipment?
Well, we weren't really able to test it. There was so much else going on at the time. They were sending people out with submarines and dropping them behind the lines in France and things like that. That it was rather like a madhouse there at the time.
How did they get you out to East Africa?
Well, first of all, I was it was on and off. I nearly went out to Norway because the Germans were going through Norway, and in the end, we had to get the Navy went and brought the King of Norway out. And I was told at a tennis dance one night that the Norwegian job was off, and I was back with the Fuzzy Wuzzy job. And on the In May 1940, we were all ready, and I left there by myself with a half ton of equipment to go to Cairo.
Was there any problem about the fact that Italy hadn't actually declared war at that time? I mean, if you were going to raise a revolt against them?
Well, there was, and there wasn't, of course. We had the feeling, well, I suppose the Foreign Office had the feeling that the Italians were going to declare war, but at the same time, we had to get this mission going because it had to be trained and it was going to take quite a long time. But when I got to Cairo, the Germans had already advanced into the Low Countries. And I was chased across France, and the ship that I was going on from Marseille to Alexandria was actually bombed, and I had to change over onto another boat then. But we didn't lose any equipment then. We arrived in Cairo on that 23rd of May, 40, and there I first met Brigadier Sanford, who was the head of Mission 101. And I met the Ethiopians, and I was handed over 13 of them to train as wireless operators. And only 3 of them had ever known anything about wireless operating. Fortunately, those three were very good indeed. They'd been French trained, and they helped me an awful lot because I couldn't speak Ethiopian, but they could either speak French or English. One of them died, but we carried on with our training in Cairo, and then on the 11th of June 40, I was listening in on my special set which I had, and I heard Mussolini ranting away, and I thought he declared war, so I called over Brigadier Sanford, and he listened in with me, and he said he has, and that of course was what we were waiting for. So we then started getting things together and to move down to Khartoum, where on the 17th of June I arrived there and picked up three more signals personnel, Whitmore, Gent and Frost, all three corporals. And then we started training and getting the mules, mule leaders, all Ethiopian by the way, and getting some exercise in and training. After that we moved to, at Khartoum I went to a war office meeting there, and they then laid down five points. The first one was that the mission was going to be sent in to Ethiopia to tie down the Italian forces. The second one was that the Kenya troops were going to try and hold a line to keep the Italians from going into Kenya, and they had been, the Italians had been concentrating at Galabat and Metemma, where they were going to thrust forward into Sudan. That had to be stopped. The fourth one was that we had to enter Ethiopia and make our headquarters at Gojam and try and organize a revolt or uprising sort of thing of all the Italian forces and bring arms into them, send them down to the Sudan border, pick up arms and bring them in.
Why was Gojam chosen?
Well, Gojam was one of the areas, it's a very large area of Ethiopia, and it had been fighting the Italians all the time, and we had contacts there. And the local king in Ethiopia, he was very pro-British and was producing an army to see us through and help us along. And the last one was that the Italian strength, we were told that the Italian strength in Ethiopia was about 250,000, which included the Ethiopian banda, which they had. Well, we then set off from Khartoum, a 2 days rail journey down to the towards the Ethiopian border, where we arrived at Gadarif, and we then started to get our mules and Ethiopian mule leaders and picking up various other Ethiopians together to form a party to go into Ethiopia. We moved off from there on the 30th of June. The mission moved off, and there were five of us: Brigadier Sanford, Captain Ronald Critchley, Captain Tim Foley, Lieutenant Drew, and three signalers, myself, Whitmore and Gent, and I'd left Frost behind in Khartoum. He wasn't awfully well. We then went off into the bush and lost ourselves for a matter of a couple of weeks trying to get away from all the spies that we knew that were on the border watching us.
Of which nationality?
They were using all sorts, Ethiopian, Sudanese, and even, I presume, some Italians that were there spying on us. Our arms at that time consisted of three revolvers, 11 rifles, and 30 old Italian rifles. We'd only got on the go for about 2 days when we were ordered to return because the Italians at the same time had made their move into Sudan and had captured two of the main forts that we wanted. And they'd shot up Gadaris, where we had our camp, and five Gloucester airplanes were destroyed on the ground at Gadaris. So we had to return and refit out. And we stayed there for until the 31st of July 1940. And then we set off again with a new sort of crew, which was Brigadier Sanford, Captain Ron Critchley, the Doctor, Drew, Whitmore and myself. And we then went on the 250-mile march to get from Gadaris into the Gojam. We took rations for 14 days, 100 cigarettes, 5 bottles of whiskey, and we were each allowed £100 of kit, which included the food, which soon ran out, I may say. And we went through bush country because they were obviously spying on us, and an aeroplane was seen practically every day, an Italian aeroplane following us. And we crossed the Ethiopian border on the 12th of August 1940. And having stopped for lunch, an aeroplane came over, an Italian aeroplane, and spotted us and dive-bombed us, and we had to get a very quick move on to get out of the way, and we went back into the bush. And we had a message from Khartoum to say that the Italians knew of the mission and knew exactly where we were. This message was brought in by a runner of the cleft stick sort of thing when the message stuck in there. We then proceeded onwards towards Dangla, which was a very strong Italian fort, and we had to bypass it.
What was its name?
Dangla. D-A-N-T-I-L-A. It was just inside Ethiopia. And we were going up the escarpment into Ethiopia, which is a pretty ghastly road, and we had to force march from 6 o'clock one morning until 10 o'clock the next morning, a 28-hour march. And I'm afraid at the end of it, we'd killed off 12 of our mules, and we were almost broken up as a mission.
How had they died?
Falling over, getting lost in the rivers, we had cross rivers, etc. And tsetse fly was bad in that area. And the rest weren't in awfully good shape either. We also lost one of our wireless sets in the river when we were crossing. Later on, while we were, when we had got there and settled down on the 17th of September 1940, I opened up a wireless. It was the first time we'd opened up because we tried to keep wireless silence. And we heard the BBC say that 185 planes had been shot down that day. And I got hold of Brigadier, and he listened in with me, and he thought that Britain was going to be invaded, which meant that we were going to be stuck out in Africa, willy-nilly. However, we had to keep on. And I kept the set open every night just to listen to the BBC news. And then Brigadier Sanford, Critchley, and three Ethiopian men, they went off with 8 mules and started the battles in the local country there against the villages. The Italians almost caught Sanford. They had a 3-hour battle there. And casualties were very heavy indeed. By that time we were right in tsetse fly land, and our mules were just about finished. So we had to send off Brigadier Sanford and Critchley with what mules we had left. And Dr. Drew, Whitmore and myself, we had to foot it along to up the mountain, the top of the mountain, and then make a headquarters there, and all the equipment went with Sanford, and we had to wait until we could get some more mules. Now, Sanford headed for a place called Sakala, which was in the Gojam, middle of the Gojam, which was going to be our headquarters. That was the end of the 250-mile march. And we there had news of a fellow called Rocky Wienholt. He had been killed by the Italians. Also, another one of ours, who was Ronnie Critchley, he had caught some sort of disease and was almost out. We there received our first mail convoy, which had come in by runner, and also brought us in a few gallons of petrol. They started off with 16 gallons, but by the time they got to us, there was only 4 gallons left, which we had to send on to Brigadier Sanford's wireless station, because he was the one that was doing the actual fighting up there. Now, the first attack that we had was on a village called Quara, Italian village there.
How do you spell that?
Q-U-A-R-A. It was an Italian camp of about 2,000 strong. And Dr. Drew, myself and Whitmore signed a letter which we sent into this camp asking them to surrender to the British forces, all three of us. And they just put the runner straight into prison. But we used that camp. We sent some of our Ethiopians there to buy us some tea, soap, and even cigarettes, because we had been living on the land then for about 3 months with no British food at all. One of our main Ethiopian chiefs, Knyaznach Werku, he was killed when we were attacking one of the forts at Metahari. I actually saw him killed. He was killed, shot right through the leg about there, and there was nothing we could do to stop the blood, and he just bled to death on the spot.
Shot in the upper thigh?
Yes, shot in the upper thigh. We were back into a very nasty tsetsefly area, and our mules and Sanford's mules were almost on their last legs. So we sent out an expedition to buy some, and we did buy 5. And then we set off again to try and join Sanford's party at Sakala, which was a 10 days' march away. When we got there, the rebellion really was going fairly well then, although Captain Critchley had to return to Khartoum. He was sick, and Sanford was left on his own. But he had to take the doctor along with him to these battles, and I had to send Whitmore out with one of the wireless stations, while I had to remain at the headquarters to keep the headquarters sort of going. We were in contact with Khartoum by wireless, by the way, which, although these sets were only supposed to have a range of 30 miles, we were doing 300 miles. The Italians were now within small forts, and they daren't move out because we had the Patriots all the way around them in strength. And we'd then brought in our first Italian prisoner, a fellow called Marcello. Now, the next battle we had was at Waz.
W-A-S?
W-A-Z. Which we drove the Italians out, and they went on to a place called Burie, B-U-R-E-E, retreated to there.
Could you describe the driving out of the Italians from Waz in a bit more detail?
Yes. We only had the Ethiopian Patriots with us, and it was a matter of firing as hard as we could, shouting and bawling to such an extent that the Italians absolutely gave up the ghost and ran.
How many of the Italians?
There were only about 150 of them.
Against how many on your side?
Just the 5, and about 50 Ethiopians. Now, at that time, Wingate was mentioned, and I was sent out to that Waz area to build a landing strip for him. I took about 5 to 10 Ethiopians with me, and we cleared a strip about 500 yards, and it took us 2 days to do it. And on the second day, the Italians had spotted us, and they sent over a bomber and a couple of fighters to shoot us up. But nothing. There was no one killed. We got away with it. But they obviously knew we were there. But it was a blind, as a matter of fact. I didn't know it. And when I got back to headquarters and met Sanford, he said to me, "Oh, that was a poor effort, wasn't it?" And I, being a signals officer, I thought, "I'm a damn good effort making a landing strip like that." But he said, "No, it's the beard I was talking about," which was not a very good one, I may say.
What type of equipment did you have for making the landing strip?
Oh, hands and matchets. We just chopped down bushes in the way and cleared the grass as much as we could. About 500 yards and 50 yards wide. But then Critchley went back, and a fellow called Thesiger, a very famous man, perhaps you've heard of him, Wilfred Thesiger, who'd been a great explorer, he came out to join us, Captain Thesiger. And the next battle was going to be Bourie, but we weren't in a fit state to do it. But 5 Wellingtons came over, RAF Wellingtons, and bombed it. And the next thing we knew was that 150 Sudanese refugees descended on our camp. They had been in Bourie, and when the Italians left it, they came over to us. But I'm afraid we just had to send them on, tell them to go back to Sudan. We couldn't give them any food because we just didn't have any.
How had they come to be there in the first place?
I never knew. I'm afraid I didn't find out why it was. There were quite a lot of Sudanese in Ethiopia, and whether they'd all been gathered together and put in that one place or not, I don't know. I'm not quite certain how they do it there.
But they were refugees from the Italians, were they? Yeah.
From Ethiopia. They'd all been gathered into that area, and I presume put in some sort of a prison. However, they escaped and came over to us once the Italians had given up the ghost.
What condition did they seem to be in?
Poor. Very poor indeed. They were half-starved. Women and children. In fact, there was a pregnant woman there, and there were 2 more that we had to operate on. The doctor drew out in the open, by the way. One man was shot through the ankle, and there were maggots crawling out of it, which must have been about 3 weeks old. And the other one had been shot through the stomach. Well, I'm afraid he died under the operation. There wasn't much we could do. I was helping on the operation, by the way.
Doing what?
I was the anaesthetist. Keeping on with... all we had was chloroform. Then Wingate arrived on the 4th of February, and he arrived at the second landing ground, not the one that I had built, and he stayed with us about 4 hours and gave Sanford the instructions of what was going to happen as regards to the Sudan force which was coming in. Then Sanford left us to go back about 100 miles to meet the Emperor and to bring him into our camp. Drew and Thesiger went up to a battlefront where they had an awful battle with the Italians. They got rather ambushed, and there was a rather bad slaughter that went on there. And we lost one Ethiopian wireless operator and one of our wireless sets. I also had one wireless set with the local king there. Whitmore and myself were at headquarters. Folick and Count Bentick were on the Gondar Road harassing the Italian convoys, which were trying to reinforce the area where we were causing the revolt.
Folly and who did you say?
Count Bentick.
How do you spell it?
B-E-N-T-I-C-H. I never saw much of Bentinck. He was out most of the time blowing up roads, blowing up Italian convoys, etc., and so was Foley. In fact, Foley lost an arm when the mule that was carrying a load of dynamite accidentally blew up, and he lost an arm out of it. I think that was the last we saw of him.
Did you describe Bentinck as a count?
He was a count, yes. I didn't see much of him. He was one of these independent fellows who came in from Egypt to help us out.
What nationality was he?
I think he was British, but he wasn't army. I'm afraid that's about all I can say about him.
Did he speak with an accent?
No. Then we were joined by our Major Simmons, and his object was to... he was a fighting man, and he started leading the Ethiopian troops against the Italians at Enjibara, Dangla and Debre Marcos, sort of investing them and kicking them in there. And Enjibara was evacuated to Debre Marcos by the Italians, and Dangla was evacuated to Bahadar, which is just south of Lake Tana. Thesiger and Simmons had done extremely good work there, and they suffered very heavy casualties with their Ethiopians. But the revolt was going well then. The Italians were rather panic-stricken, and they were on the run. On the 15th of February, Wingate arrived with the Sudanese Defence Force, one battalion, and a Colonel Bousted, and one Ethiopian battalion. And then from then on, really, the Mission 101 was taken over by Wingate's forces. And we immediately started a drive against a town called Burie, B-U-R-E-E, which was one of the big Italian camps. I'm afraid at that time I'd fallen ill, and I had to be flown back into Khartoum for a couple of weeks' holiday to recuperate.
What was your illness?
Absolute weariness. I'd been 6 months on the go then with hardly any sleep and food. We'd been living on the country, etc., etc. I'd worn out, completely worn out.